If you love Star Wars and love the excitement of chasing your favorite Star Wars collectibles, the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting app from Topps is for you. Collect and trade with friends new and old through the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting app from Topps. These are the cards you're looking for.
This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. I regret to report that both our Jedi Order and the Republic have fallen. Our future is uncertain. But in time, a new hope will emerge.
Coffee with Kenobi presents Rebels Reactions with Dan Z and Corey Club.
All troopers, focus your fire on... on the Jedi.
Come with us. Learn what it truly means to be a Jedi.
I'm in space. And I'm about to die.
You need an opening.
Found one.
What did he say?
He said hello, hyperspace.
Oh, and guess what? This is the podcast you're looking for.
Well, we're back on Ryloth this week with Cham Syndulla, Gobi, Numa, Thrawn's back, Chopper goes home, Hera goes home. It's just a great episode of Rebels. Welcome back to Rebels Reactions. My name is Aaron Harris. I'm your host. Joining me this week is, of course, one of our favorites, Miss Jay Krebs. How are you, Jay?
Aw, it's nice to be a favorite. Thank you so much, Aaron. I'm so excited to be back, you know, talking about the Syndulla family in general and just Thrawn and everything else. It's great. So I'm so glad to be back and talking Rebels with you.
Well, it's great to have you back. And this was a natural selection for this episode because last time you were on with us last year during the season, we hit Hera's homecoming, and we discussed her reunion with Cham. So back on Ryloth, I mean, we just pick up where we left off and start that discussion and continue running with it. So,
and I'm so happy about that too. This thread just keeps on going. So it's great.
Exactly. So of course we are back on Ryloth in this episode where of course Hera has to come in and rescue her father, who the Imperials are giving him a little bit more trouble than what they used to. Come to find out, Hera's home province, of course, has been captured completely by the Imperials, by a Captain Slavin. And, of course, unfortunately, a family heirloom, which is passed from parent to child. The Kalakori is, unfortunately, still in the family home of the Syndullas. And Hera is not going to have any of that. So she goes undercover with... our favorite Padawan, Mr. Ezra Bridger, and they infiltrate the house, try to get the Kalakori, unfortunately are captured by Slavin and by the returning Grand Admiral Thrawn. So, and of course, the adventure ensues from there, botched prisoner exchange, and of course, we see how Hera winds up escaping. Unfortunately, we see a lot of conversation, a lot of depth in this episode. Definitely a lot of fun, a lot of reminiscing. We learn a lot about everybody in this. Not only a lot about the Twi'leks, we learn a lot about Thrawn and how he perceives things. And it's just all around incredible episode.
There's so many layers to this episode, which I love. And, you know, one of the things that I think is great is that it connects so much between the Clone Wars and with Rebels. And there's so many go-betweens, but yet there's so much freshness that's brought into it, too. And there's, like you said, there's just so much that we learned in this episode that it's incredible. It really is.
Oh, exactly. And I mean, we got a lot of Rebel connections in this particular episode. Not only are we back on Ryloth, there's a lot of discussion of the Clone Wars, of course, the crashed Y-Wing in the one scene with Chopper. They discuss the Clone Wars and how it shaped Hera growing up. She even refers to the Imperials as Gutkers, which mm-hmm. actually is a reference from Clone Wars. Mm-hmm. The Gurkhas are, if you remember the Ryloth arc from the Clone Wars, those hard shell creatures that the Imperials or that the Separatists release into the city to take out the clones and Obi-Wan are those are Gurkhas. So, mm-hmm. so we got a lot of references into our past, into the Clone Wars, which is always fun to do, especially with the crew that they have involved with it.
And the Blurgs, of course.
Oh, the Blurgs.
We get to see the Blurgs.
We get to see the Blurgs again. Those are always fun. So I saw somebody refer to them as the tadpoles. The tadpole riding things.
I would love to ride one of those because in a way it looks like they're riding along so smooth. And you know they have to be fast to keep up with the scout troopers or outrun them. But I think to myself, gosh, I'd want to just ride one just to see if it's like riding a horse or if it's, you know, a little rougher than that or I don't know. I guess I'll never get my chance, but one can dream, right?
Well, you know, with the way virtual reality games are going nowadays, you may get the chance one day. So
true.
Here's our Star Trek reference for the week. You may wind up on a holodeck one day and get to ride one. You never know.
You never know.
We always squeeze one Star Trek
good
reference.
Good one. We do.
Every week so far, every episode so far this season, we have squeezed a Star Trek reference in.
Nice.
And we haven't stopped yet. I'm still trying to figure out where we're going to squeeze the bad puns in this week, so give me time.
Oh, I've got a couple. Trust
me. Oh, there
we
go. Good.
You can count on me.
Perfect. Well, let's talk about it. You brought them up already. We see introduced in this episode something we have not seen since Return of the Jedi, actually. We have the return of the Imperial Scout Trooper, a.k.a. the Biker Scout.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, that was nice to see those guys coming back in.
Absolutely. And I love the way, like we were talking about before, with when the scout trooper, you know, just kind of decides to come up on board. And Zeb says to to Ezra, do you have this one yet, kid? Nope. And, you know, that's our way of knowing, well, this is our debut. This is the first time we get to see him.
Exactly. And they write it in so well. When they do these types of introductions, everything just flows right in, and they work this particular skit in this perfectly. After that, of course, you have Zeb knocking out the scout trooper, going, "Sorry, you want your buckle?" Bam! Just nice little hook, and next thing you know, Ezra's got a new outfit.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And like you said, everything is done so smooth. I mean, the story group, obviously, you know, they know exactly where to fit these pieces together. And they do it so seamlessly that you don't even really think twice about it. And, you know, I went back and I actually watched this episode 3 times just to make sure that I, you know, kind of caught everything and went through everything in my own mind. And you do. You just see it as one fluid piece of history. And there's no breaks in it. And so unless you stop and really think about it, it's just something that's kind of how it is.
Exactly. And they work it in perfectly. So you have to break it up. These shows aren't something you can sit down, watch. I mean, you can sit down, watch it once and be happy. That's fine. But to catch all of the Easter eggs, to catch all of the nuances of each episode, you want to go back and you want to watch it several times. Just to even catch little eggs, like there at the end when Hera's blowing up the house and the explosion's ripping through everything. One of the stormtroopers that's getting blown off the patio lets out one of the famous little Wilhelm screams.
Thank you. I thought I heard that.
Oh, you did.
I thought, okay, am I hearing things or is that, yep. Okay, good.
It was the Wilhelm. You can't have Star Wars without a Wilhelm.
Nah.
So they've had it in every movie. Why not Rebels as well?
Absolutely.
So always those little nuances that you can catch going back and listening over and over and over, watching it. And definitely a lot of great things in this episode. But let's start off with, of course, we learned a lot about the Twi'leks in this episode. We mm-hmm. see a lot about their country. We get to see Hera's home. We get to learn about a little more about their culture. Than we have in the past, mainly when it comes to family heirlooms and something passed down. We have the Kalachori, which is right. Basically what gets this episode going. It's what gets this mission underway, is the Kalachori is now in the hands of the Empire. Hera doesn't want it there. That's mm-hmm. hers. That's their legacy. That's their story. She winds up, I mean, as she tells Thrawn later in it, that's her family's legacy. And for the Kalachori, of course, resembles a lot like a totem pole, essentially. It's something that every generation's passed down. The parents add to it and just add their life story to it, and it passes down, which is very interesting. And it's designed a lot like, almost like what a Twi'lek looks like. You got the thicker handle down the middle, then you got the two tails coming off the top of it, off the head.
It's like Leku. I thought about that too. I put that in my notes. I wanted to bring that up.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's very, very unique piece of artwork. And it's individualized for each family, which is always fun and enjoyable. But we also see the appeal in that for somebody like Grand Admiral Thrawn, mm-hmm. who makes his life studying art and living art. As we go through this episode, he discusses that. And we get to see, of course, we'll talk about Thrawn and what he came into this episode a little later. But back to the artwork into Hera's house. I mean, we get to see a lot of her history through there as they're going through just the setup of the house, the way it's gone through as she's walking through the setup. You see the designs on the walls, the dividers, the pillars. It very almost resembled very Western type feel, hacienda type from the outside look. But very cool, very interesting. But we have the picture in when they finally get into the office, hanging on the wall in Cham Syndulla's office, where they wind up finding the Kalachori of Cham, of course, young Hera. And it's our first glimpse of Hera's mom, too.
And she's beautiful. That was so breathtaking, that piece of art. And it was the bright spot in the room. You almost felt like it was illuminated, like backlit almost. But it was, I don't know if it was or not, but it just seemed like it was just the shining focal point of that room. And beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
Oh, it was stunning. Almost, to me, it reminded me of almost like a stained glass artwork.
A mosaic,
exactly. Mm-hmm. And it was it was definitely the centerpiece of the room. You could tell that's where Cham's pride was at that point.
Absolutely.
You could tell he cares more about his family than Hera. I think even Hera knows at that point. Because you remember in the last episode, there was always that, you were never there. It was always our people first, not us. Mm-hmm. That whole conflict that was going on. And, of course, obviously they've made some kind of connection since then, because they're now working together. She's coming to his rescue when she needs help, making supply runs for Ryloth and for Cham. And then she gets in that office, and there's that centerpiece of his office, is that beautiful work of art, which tells you a lot about this guy's character, that he's, even though he is this war hero, he is focused on freeing Ryloth, beating the Empire, driving them back, even though that's been his focus for so many years, and of course during the Clone Wars with the Separatists, this is still his home. He still cares about his family. And ultimately, deep down inside, even though he would, as Hera always said, you were never home, you were never there, he was doing everything, obviously, you could see for his family.
Right. And, you know, and at first that was, it's like father, like daughter. And at first it was one of those things, when I was watching this episode, I thought, okay, Hera's really going to let everybody else put themselves at risk for a personal mission. But yet then I can see, especially with what you're saying, as far as, even though Cham may not have been there in person, quote unquote, home is where the heart is. And his heart was in his home, even though he may not have been there. And it's obvious that for Hera, it was the same. And so for her to return to her home was almost like, a mission on her part to not only, and I think what she was trying to do at first was obviously retrieve the Kalachuri. It was something that was important to her mom. Her mom had died as a freedom fighter, almost to pay homage to her. But I think in the end, what she realized was that even though Thrawn got a hold of it, that whole experience for her brought her closure, and it helped her understand her dad even more.
Oh, exactly. And it was almost like a awakening for Hera by the end of this episode that her legacy is not built into the Kalachuri and what happens there. She realizes, in that final scene where she's sitting there with Cham and Kanan, she even says, she goes, it's not my legacy anymore. I don't need the Kalachuri. I have you. I have my father. Mm-hmm. I have my family here on board the ship. She realized that past is behind her. It gave her she got the closure she needed, but it made her realize that that's not what she has to bank on. She has so much more than what she used to have, which I think was a great awakening for her in this episode, and some big growth for her by the end of the episode.
Yeah, and blowing up her house, I mean, that wasn't just a strategic move. It was also very symbolic, too, in a lot of ways.
Exactly. Exactly. And very symbolic of her letting go. I mean, that whole exchange with Cham as they're doing the prisoner exchange, and he's like, I'm sorry. And she's like, I'm sorry. And he's like, don't worry about it. I've been captured before. She goes, no. About the house.
And he's like, what? And his surprise, was palpable. The look on his face was priceless.
Oh, absolutely. And of course, when she ordered the destruction, it blows up. They're laying there. His mouth is just like gaping wide open, like almost like he can't. I can't believe it. Mm-hmm. And of course, they have to help him up, and they make their escape. But definitely, it's a lot of growth for Hera in this episode, which we would expect from an episode called Hera's Heroes, wouldn't we?
Right. Absolutely. And, one other thing, too, when I was doing a little bit of back research, the word Kalachuri in Twi'leki actually means beginning. So her heritage began there, but it is now continuing with her new family. And I love how she said about Kanan first. It's you. Oh, space married. Yay. And then, and then she said everybody else. But, it was Kanan came first, which I thought was really interesting. And she didn't, she didn't necessarily put her dad first. She put Kanan first.
Exactly. I mean, I heard that when I was watching it, and I heard that line, and I could hear fangirls around the world squealing. Because
I was one of them.
I'm sure you were.
Yep.
there's a lot of depth in that. We've seen all. They've given us glimpses into the relationship all through the Rebels. When they rescued Kanan from Mustafar, he gets out. When they get on the ship together, what do they do? She runs up, gives them a big hug.
Right.
When they're on at the secret base, and Kanan's lost his sight, she's the one pulling him out of his slump, talking to him, trying to get him back into the swing of things. She's the one convincing him to stay in the rebellion before they went on their missions on board when he doesn't want to be involved in a military action. I've dealt with armies before. I've been in the military. I don't want to do this again.
And not to get off her. Yeah. And not, I don't want to get off on a Hera Kanan tangent here, but she knows how to talk to him too. Mm-hmm. She talks to him on a level that no one else knows how to talk to him, nor would they try. And, I think that that's part of their connection to one another, that she knows what to say, how to say it, and when to say it to get through to him.
Exactly. Exactly. And the only way that happens is through a relationship like you would think they would have, the way what they indicate. So definitely symbolism in those words, a lot to be interpreted through those words too. I'm sure a lot of people have a lot of different thoughts, and I think a lot of people have the similar idea though, that there's some special meaning, special thoughts between her and Kanan at that point.
Right.
So, but we're talking about Kanan. Let's talk about Kanan for a little bit, because of course we've past couple episodes we've been dealing a lot with Kanan, overcoming his blindness and his injuries and regaining confidence that he did not have before, mm-hmm. that he lost since his injury to Maul at the end of season two.
Right.
We see him in action in this episode quite a bit.
Definitely. And I think one of the things, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but I think a lot of his turnaround, I guess you could say, came from meeting the Bendu and realizing that, you know, there was so much more to him. And he knew, of course, he could use the Force instead of his eyesight. But I think it really was that episode that got through to him. And it was interesting when I was watching that for the third time with my teenage son. And he said, whoa, he goes, did you see Kanan pull out his lightsaber? How did he even know where Zeb was? And how did he know how close he was? And it's almost like he's using some sort of Force echolocation, you know, almost like a bat would in a way. That's just kind of how I interpreted that when, you know, because he obviously knew right where to go, right what to do, you know, when to deflect the bolts and and throwing back that cannon blast. Was that sweet or what?
That was incredible. I mean, it's like he picked something up from Ezra at that point, because stuff Ezra was doing when he was learning from the Sith Holocron.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously we got Kanan learning some stuff from Ezra as well. But yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. Your son was dead on with that. When he pulled out that lightsaber, he was just like, he knew what was going on. He knew his surroundings. The Bendu in those past episodes, to quote Yoda, he unlearned what he had learned and learned something brand new.
So true.
Which definitely made a difference. And I think the icing on the cake for Kanan in this episode is at the end when he's deflecting the bolts on the ramp as the ghost is taking off and flying away. And you have Slavin just laying there watching them escape. And he just kind of gives them the little, you know, salute off his brow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See you later.
Well, his whole body language was different in this one, too. I mean, he stood straighter. Mm-hmm. In some of the past episodes, you could see he was more hunched.
Yep.
And he was more almost closed in on himself, where he had that Kanan swag again. You know, he was, this is what I do and this is who I am and I'm here and let's do this thing.
Exactly. There was a lot more instilled confidence in Kanan in this episode that was gained between the last episode and this episode, honestly, which is what we've needed. I mean, because we didn't have a lot of Kanan in the last episode. We had a little bit. But it was mostly focused on Sabine. But that in the episode before that, with Maul, I mean, it was definitely a lot of. Still, he wasn't as confident as he could have been. But he's a lot more confident now, that's for sure. And his actions, his posture, his ability to wield the Force is a lot of proof of that.
And I'm sure he'll have some setbacks along the way. You know, this is a great milestone for him. And, you know, it's a great turning point, I guess you could say. But I think there's going to be some things that might knock him back down and question his abilities and maybe, you know, question himself. And I think that just calls back to human nature. And it's a great reflection, because that's what Rebels is, really. It's a reflection of human nature, that you get knocked down, you learn from it, and you find ways to make yourself stronger. And I think that's what Kanan is doing.
Exactly. And let me throw this out there. You know, a lot of times, you know, people always find superhuman strength and ability to do things that they don't do when someone they care about's in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
How much of this ability and this confidence that he then had, that he discovered in this action, in this episode, was because Hera was in trouble?
Yeah, so true. And she was his number one focus. Good point. I like that.
So definitely there's a lot of lot that can be gleaned from that as well, when it comes to their relationship too. Because obviously there was, if that's what got his power back up and got that confidence and that swagger back to him, just because he was worried about what was happening to Hera, that opens up a brand new door at that point.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to wait and see how he does in the next couple episodes to see if this was a one-time boost out of worry or if he really does have that confidence and swagger back now.
Right. I agree.
Let's shift gears a bit. Let's talk some Imperials. We're introduced to Captain Slavin in this episode. Of course, he is Cham Sadula's nemesis. He is in charge of the Imperial forces on Ryloth at this point, or so we think at this point, up until we find out he's then reporting to Thrawn, who's kind of taken over things. But he, of course, apparently is not the most competent of Imperial commanders, apparently.
Nah, he's kind of a tool, let's be honest.
He's not the brightest bulb in the Imperial shed, let's be honest.
No. Well, and his name, just, you know, you hear Slavin, Slavin, Slobber.
Yeah.
That's what I think of.
he was a goober, wasn't he?
He sure was.
and it showed, of course, with the throughout the episode, when he's in the room with Thrawn and with Hera, and he is confused out of his mind, trying to figure out why he's talking, why he's letting the slave girl talk to him like that, why he's giving her the time of day the way he is. The way Thrawn is, you could see legitimate confusion and just dumbfoundness on this man's face.
Well, it's obvious that he had more confidence in his knowledge and abilities than he needed to give himself credit for. And Thrawn definitely let him know that at one point.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. It was a big thing for him. I mean, we even see him belittling the artwork of the Twi'leks, and even referring to destroying the Kalachori because it's just junk at that point. And we see him almost, you know, take his head off.
Mm-hmm.
Which is,
yeah, it's when he calls it Twi'lek trash, I believe.
Exactly. And we see,
and then, Thrawn kind of loses it on him just a little bit. That was nice to see. I'm not gonna lie, because, you know, Thrawn is so cool and just so collected and so calm. And then all of a sudden he just, you know, grabs Slavin, and it's all he needed to do. And I think Slavin, you know, may have soiled himself a little bit possibly at that moment.
Yes, he was probably thankful his uniform was the dark olive green at that point.
Yep.
Not the gray, you know, it would have been nice if it had been black, but the dark olive green works for him in this situation. Because, I mean, let's be honest, Thrawn let out a growl that scared me.
It was feral.
Oh,
it
very
was,
much.
Yeah, it was primal, feral, whatever you want to call it. And it was, but that's so great to see that, though, because, you know, when you were talking about Thrawn, and of course, those of us that remember Thrawn from Legends and the way that his character was then, and just bringing that and just seeing that, it's so great to see it on screen. I can't get enough of it.
Oh, exactly. It's definitely is. I can't wait to see where they're taking this, because we've already seen a new side of Thrawn that we didn't see in Legends. We never saw that primal anger,
right,
that he just did in this episode. Of course, he immediately caught himself and apologized, and I forgot not everybody appreciates art the way I do.
But I think it sent a message too, like, do your homework. Mm-hmm. don't be like this. You need to know your enemy. It's so much more than just scratching the surface and making assumptions about what you think you know. You need to dig deeper. And I think even Hera was very surprised that Thrawn knew as much about her as he did.
Oh, exactly. And definitely that's a big piece of the puzzle with Thrawn. And of course, we all know from Legends, and of course what we've seen so far, how he learns about his enemy. It's all about taking the time to know what happens. I mean, in this episode, when before he even reveals he knows who Hera is, he's just walking around her and he's talking to Slavin. He's like, tells him that that nice speech we heard from the trailer, the preview, to defeat an enemy, you must know them, not simply their battle tactics, but their history, art, and philosophy.
Ooh, very nice Thrawn.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
I'll be doing that at work tomorrow at some point,
nice.
Too.
There you go. I loved how Ezra was like, who's the blue guy?
Exactly.
Oh, I cracked up at that. She's like, I don't know.
This episode was getting, by the end of it, was getting so deep because of Thrawn and getting mm-hmm. in the whole psychological part that he was bringing to it. It was getting deep. We needed those comedic reliefs. We needed the babbling Slaven. We needed the whole comic relief from the Spiker Scout at the beginning.
Even Chopper.
Yes, Chopper. We have Chopper in this episode, folks.
Should we talk about Chopper?
I think we just might.
I think we should. Are you ready now, or did you want to wrap up some Thrawn?
Well, we're going to continue with some Thrawn here in a minute, but let's go ahead and talk about Chopper since we brought him up, because, you know, I can't turn down Chopper.
Oh, you know I can't either. So we're on the same page when it comes to that. So where do you want to start, with the Y-Wing?
We're going to start with that Y-Wing, because we get some, again, like I said, a lot of deep stuff in this episode, and we wind up seeing Chopper disguised again as that Imperial droid. They've got him painted up black again and looking very Imperial. And when Hera and Ezra, who's disguised as a biker scout, show up at Hera's home and they're going in, they see Chopper and they're trying to get his attention, but he's not responding. And then Hera explains to Ezra, because he's wanting to know what's wrong with them, he's like, you know, that's Y-Wing that's there. And Chopper's just sitting there staring at it. He's like, that Y-Wing crashed during the Clone Wars and my father left it there just as a memorial. Which is a good thought. I mean, definitely it's a nice tribute to those who sacrificed for Ryloth during the Clone Wars. But then she also drops the bomb on Ezra. That's the ship I pulled Chopper out of.
Mm-hmm. So, how cool was that to get that backstory?
Oh, that was chilling almost. I mean, I got chills just talking about it now. To see the ship that brought Hera and Chopper together to begin with.
Right.
That's where their story starts.
Right. And just
on that ship.
And again, that's almost like their Kalachori. It's their beginning.
Exactly.
So, and I loved how she said, and he still has issues with it. Here's a droid having issues. So, you know, and again, I know we've talked about the personification of Chopper and other droids as well, but here's just yet another example of how deep Chopper's feelings, if you want to call them that, go. Because obviously, if he's still having quote unquote issues with this Y-Wing every time he sees it, it's almost like he's having post-traumatic stress from it. And, you know, how you know, human is that to see that in a droid?
Exactly. But also, it makes you wonder too, who was his pilot? What mm-hmm. kind of connection did he have with this pilot? Was it an Anakin R2 connection?
Right.
Was it a simpler Obi-Wan and R4? What kind of connection did he have with that pilot that is got him when he sees that ship with it?
Oh, you just gave me chills. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't even think about that. That's so true. Great point. Wow. Yeah. I definitely have chills right now.
Yeah. I would love at some point in history in the future to get that backstory of Chopper and Hera, that mission Chopper went on during the Clone Wars that mm-hmm. led him to Hera.
We're getting these little breadcrumb kind of things, but story group, are you listening? Oh, we want to know who the pilot was.
Exactly. Let us know.
Yes.
Was it a long-term working relationship they had? Was it short-term? Obviously, all indications didn't state this was definitely a deep moment for him. Mm-hmm. Just by the way, he just sits there and stares. He's obviously reminiscing, so to speak, however a droid can reminisce. He's replaying the images in his databanks, in his head at that point. A very deep, very emotional time for Chopper, but he doesn't stay wrapped up in those issues for long because we wind up finding him later in the episode. And they wind up, he winds up actually helping in the ultimate climax of the episode. He lets Hera and Ezra, who by this point have been captured and are locked up, know that, hey, you know, your dad's surrendering in a prisoner exchange for you, too. And, of course, Hera hatches this plan to blow up the house. And who does she have doing all the dirty work for?
Chopper. And he's loving every second of it. He's just laughing the whole time. You could tell when he found those explosives. It was just like, you know, a kid on Christmas morning, man. He had just opened up the best present ever. Boy, was he going to make good use of those things.
Oh, that was the best little giggle he let out. That was, I mean, he just chuckled away when he saw that.
And then planting them all over the place.
Oh, yeah, he's just running around. Just like, he's got his arms out. Pop it here. Ha ha. Boom, boom, bam. Bam, 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 bam.
And then the piece de resistance was when he just rolled right past Slavin and was just like, wait till we got what, see what we got for you, man.
Oh, exactly. And was it me or did he let out that little laugh as he rolled by Slavin?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He was giggling.
Oh, he was. Cause Slavin's like, droid, what are you doing? Get back here. And of course that's when Hera's of course having discussion with Cham. I'm sorry about the house.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, she turns around, Chopper, now! And, of course, Chopper slams down on that detonator, and boom!
There it goes.
There goes the house.
Yep. You know, there's one other thing, too. It was, I don't know if you noticed this. It was when they were getting ready to... it was basically when Slavin came up on the hologram to make the deal, I guess you could say, for the exchange. And then Sabine said, could the trap be more obvious? All I could think of was Chandler Bing from Friends. Did you ever watch Friends?
I did.
Could the trap be more obvious?
Oh,
so I don't know if that was just, you know, something they threw in there for a Sabine thing or if it was like somebody that was a Friends fan in there. But I immediately thought Chandler Bing when I heard that.
Yes, I can see that. I can hear that. I didn't make the connection at first, but as soon as you said it, yes, absolutely. That's Chandler to a T at that point.
Yeah.
Wonder if that was on purpose or if that just happened.
No, that's what I was wondering
nice
too.
Coincidence. We'll have to tweet Pablo and ask. So
there you go. See if he's a Friends fan.
Exactly.
That's perfect.
All right. So.
Well, you know what I love too, and as they're flying away, you know, Thrawn says they've earned their victory today. And this was very enlightening. You know, he everything's a learning curve for him. He learns from everything, even when he never sees anything as a defeat, ever. But, you know, he sees it as something that he's learned about his enemy. And that's what's setting him apart from basically everybody else in the Empire.
Exactly. And there was a lot for him to learn in this episode about everybody.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And definitely he's got a lot that he's going to glean from this. And we're going to talk about that right after Dan and Corey tell us about the top Star Wars trading app that is available on your mobile devices now. Dan, Corey?
If you are a huge Star Wars fan, and let's face it, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably are. And if you love collecting Star Wars, the Star Wars Card Trader app from Topps is for you.
The best part, the Star Wars Card Trader app features incredible images from the original trilogy, the prequels, The Clone Wars, Rebels, and The Force Awakens. Every era you love is included on the app.
It's easy and a lot of fun, too. Beloved characters, key scenes, and unforgettable moments are in every pack. Open the app every day and get free credits to spend on card packs from the Cantina, trade with your friends, and make new ones along the way as you continue to add to your Star Wars collection. And it's all free.
The variety makes it fun, too. So chase what you love. Some of the latest packs include poster series, classic comic book series, helmet variety packs, and so much more. There are even exclusive cards you can get by completing sets, as well as special inserts and even autograph opportunities. Don't worry about missing the cards you love either, as you sign up for notifications right on the app.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting app from Topps can be downloaded for free from iTunes or Google Play. Be sure to download the app and start your collection today.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader app from Topps is available now. And remember, these are the cards you're looking for.
All right. Thank you so much, Dan and Corey. If you haven't gotten that Topps trading app game, check it out now. A lot of great things on there right now. We got all the Rogue One cards being released. Of course, there's a ton of Rebels cards on there. which definitely is the ones I'm trying to collect. So check it out and play. You get free cards and free credits every day so you can buy cards. So definitely check it out. It's a great thing, great artwork, great pictures, just a lot of fun all around. Trade it with your friends. If you don't have friends to trade it with me.
Or me.
Or Jay. We'll take your cards.
Absolutely. Yeah, even if you just log in every day, you know, get your coins and look to see what the new today's releases are. I mean, that's if I don't have time, I at least do that much.
Oh, exactly. Because you build up and after 7 days, on the seventh day, you get, as long as you've checked in at least once in those once a day for 6 days, on that seventh day check-in, you get double the amount of credits.
50,000 credits.
Woo-hoo.
Yay. At least that's what mine is. I don't, maybe once you get up levels, like, do you increase once you get up levels? Do you know?
I don't think so.
So it's basically the same. Hey, it's your banking coin. Yeah. So that's right. It's a lot of fun.
I know. Until when they started releasing all the new Rebel stuff for season 3. And there's a Rebel specific packs. I had banked up to like close to 2 million credits. Then they started releasing those, and I'm like down to like 500,000 now.
So, we have more than me. I think I'm around 300,000, but I was saving up for a while for that one that was like 2 million or 5 million or something like that for the signature cards. I didn't make it, but you know, it's all good. I got some good cards out of it anyway.
Yes. I did manage to. About 6 months ago, get the signature cards through there. So that was cool. Got a Jeremy Bullock too. That was awesome.
Did you? Yes. I'm jealous.
Very cool. Boba Fett.
Yay. I got to meet him in person. So
he's a great in person.
He is. He's awesome.
Yes.
And I got to meet his wife too. I'm like, are you Boba Fett's wife? Yeah. At the last Celebration Orlando.
Okay.
She was down there with them. So I said, are you Mrs. Fett? I think that's what I said. Are you Mrs. Fett? She was so sweet.
I met him at Star Wars weekends. His wife was there, but she wasn't with him at the signing. So,
gotcha.
He was a lot of fun, a lot of fun. So definitely check out the Card Trader app. Let us know what you think. But let's jump back into Harris Heroes today as we get into probably the meat of the discussion today, because this is what everybody has been talking about from this episode. Is our Hera and Thrawn meet and greet session that they did have as Hera is captured inside her home by the Imperials. She gets taken into her father's office where, of course, then they begin to talk to her and we get to see Thrawn and Hera interact. And Hera's playing the simple refugee character. She's disguised her voice. She's got that Twi'lek accent that we hear from all the other Twi'leks in the episode, or even in Clone Wars. She's got that thick accent she's put in the play, and she's playing like she's the innocent refugee trying to steal stuff to feed her family. And of course, Slavin's buying it hook, line, and sinker, as we expect. Thrawn isn't. He is learning. As we've discussed, and he's not playing. He looks at Slavin as they begin to talk. She's talking about how she's just trying to steal that to feed her family, and then he starts seeing the extent of Thrawn's knowledge about the Twi'leks at that point.
Ahead.
No, I was going to say just as he begins to explain what the Kalachori is to Slavin.
And what I was going to say was the way that Hera was dressed too, I actually would have thought that maybe she would have changed her outfit, because she even has the new Rebel insignia on her X-Wing, basically her pilot's costume. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Thrawn's got to know what that is. I mean, if he's been doing his research on the Rebels and knowing that they're starting to grant status and rank to their people, essentially, that had to have been a tip off for him too. So I thought about that. I thought he's got to know just by looking at her clothes that this is not just your run of the mill Twi'lek girl that's running around as a refugee trying to feed her family. The only thing she did do was take off her goggles. That was pretty much the only thing that she made a change to as far as her entire outfit went.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that rank bar is still right there on her shoulder, attached to the strap. And
that's what it is, a rank bar. Thank you.
It definitely is plain view. There's no trying to hide it or disguise it or any of it. So anybody that remotely has had any interaction with the Rebels or has studied the Rebels, like we know Thrawn is doing, will know what's going on at that point. Because looking at it, of course, even if he hasn't studied the Rebels, he's a Grand Admiral. I'm sure he has been throughout the known galaxy, the inner core and outer core worlds. Mm-hmm. So those are very similar to the style of rank insignias and stuff that they wore on Alderaan. So he would recognize that as some kind of military insignia at that point. Even though Alderaan didn't have any weapons, they had their ships, they had their officers, they had their people in place. So it's very similar in design rank style as what the Alderaan officers wear.
Good point. And I loved how Hera's, you know, of course, her demeanor changed too as she pretended to be this little refugee versus once she figured out that Thrawn knew who she was all about standing her ground, which I thought was awesome. But I loved how he, you know, and I don't want to, you know, get into anything that you were going to say, but as far as how, you know, he studied war, but it's in her blood. She was forged by war. And it's almost like, was he saying that to explain, you know, almost to Slaven who she was? Or was it to, you know, almost get under her skin in a way to say, you never had a normal life. This is all you've known. So, of course, you're going to do this, this, or this. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because that whole quote is just phenomenal during that interaction. I don't think it's honestly, I took that as more as him letting her know, I know you. Not a punch at her, not a poke, a jab at her, not a, hey, Slaven, you idiot, this is who you're talking about here. This was a legitimate, I know who you are. I know what you've been through. I know everything about you.
Yeah.
I mean, that in its entirety, that quote is phenomenal. And I wrote the whole quote down because it was that good. Is he's walking, he's looking at her and he's just like, war, it's all that you've known, isn't it? You were so young when you survived the Clone Wars. No wonder you're as equipped in spirit to fight as well as you do. War is in your blood. I study the art of war, work to perfect it, but you were forged by it.
Nice.
How can you not get scared or even just remotely fearful of what this guy knows about you at that point?
Oh, man. Yeah. And the way that they wrote that was absolutely perfect. And Lars Mikkelsen's delivery was spot on. I mean, they couldn't have gotten anybody any better to do this voice than him.
Oh, it's perfect. I said in our discussion of the premiere, this is exactly how I heard him in my head. Every time I read the Thrawn trilogy from the Legends line, every time I read that and still read it, every time I read it, that's the voice I've always heard. And they've brought it to life so perfectly.
So true. It's silky, but yet it seeps into your pores as he says things.
it just reaches right through you when he talks. It's like the Force. It penetrates you. It surrounds you. It binds you. I mean, it takes you to a different level at that point. You feel you're learning something when you hear this man talk.
And to see that artwork, that mosaic of the family in the background as he's talking to her too. You look at Cham as the figurehead of the family, and then you see little Hera in there, and it's almost like her reflection of herself as he's speaking to her about herself.
Exactly. And the level of respect he assigns to her too. Even though she is a rebel, she is a prisoner. That level of respect, he doesn't refer to her as a prisoner or any of that. She's their host.
And even thanks her for her hospitality.
Exactly. which just shows the level of respect he has for his enemies at that point. Because, I mean, he has this great, what they're considering a rebel leader, even calls her that at some point. Mm-hmm. In this episode, as he's introducing her to Slavin, he's like, let me introduce you to Hera Syndulla, rebel pilot, freedom fighter.
And he even bows as he says it and gives this wonderful arm motion. Hera Syndulla, the way he says her last name too.
Oh,
it's incredible. Yeah, but it just shows what a tactician his tactics, you know, if that's a word, tactician, but just how smart he is that, like you said, he doesn't discount anyone and he doesn't downplay anyone. And obviously he knows that Hera is a big card in the deck at this point, at least because of Sham and because of Ryloth and everything that Sham had done before then. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's not, obviously we know Thrawn's not dumb. He's not going to discount her. And I think he's schooling Slavin or Slavin at the same time. I heard him called Slavin, Slavin, both. But yeah, he's definitely schooling him at the same time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely he is. And in multiple ways, too, because as soon as she introduces himself and he identifies her as Hera, and he turns around and she turns around. And, of course, the charade is off.
Mm-hmm.
She has dropped that accent. She is talking in her normal voice, and she's standing up to this guy.
Right. She straightens her back. She lifts her chin. I mean, her whole posture changes.
Exactly. It's the Hera we've known throughout the series, snapping right back into place. Not this undercover, woe is me slave girl. This mm-hmm. is bam. This is the Hera we have loved. Mm-hmm. Through the last two seasons so far, and that has just become the spearhead of this group.
Right.
And of course, at that point, you know, they're sitting there, they're discussing, and next thing you know, you see, of course, in the room with them the whole time is Ezra, but he's still in his biker scout costume. So at some point, well, for some reason, he goes and tries to pull his blaster on Slavin, and of course gets stunned by Thrawn.
Thrawn did not miss a beat either. He knew the whole time that Ezra was not a biker scout. I mean, he just knew it the whole time. You could tell it. He didn't even flinch. It was just like his arm didn't move. It was just his hand. Pow. And that was it. Done.
Exactly.
Down goes Ezra.
Exactly. I mean, because it doesn't take a military genius to realize your biker scout is not going to be on guard duty.
Well, he was the one that brought her in, but,
they don't know that.
That's true.
They just have a random biker scout walking around a building in a secured area where there are mm-hmm. no bikes to be scouting on.
Especially when he just kind of emerges from the back of one of those partitions.
Exactly.
When he, you know, he says, secure the prisoner or whatever he says. And out comes Ezra, just kind of like right in the forefront.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a dead giveaway too, I'm sure.
Oh, exactly. And Slavin is just amazed by everything that's just happened. He even mm-hmm. he even looks at Thrawn and goes, how did you know? And Thrawn just keeps it nice and simple. With just a simple answer, because rebels have friends always rushing to the rescue.
Hmm.
How many mm-hmm. times
so
have
true.
We seen rebels do that?
Right.
It happens in every episode of Rebels. Or they always come in and rescue each other.
And Thrawn's seen it firsthand before. So
exactly, he saw it when they went and stole the Y-wings. In that premiere episode, when they stole the Y-wings are leaving the planet. They find out they have no weapons or no hyperdrive. What happens? In comes the ghost, in comes the carrier, in come the rebel ships. Boom. Save the day. They escape. So he knows from history, this is what these people do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very easy at that point, I guess, to deduce that, well, the biker scout's not where he belongs. I guess he's a rebel. Plus, he was a little short for a stormtrooper.
There's your joke. There you go.
Ta-da. Ta-da. Longer than a little later than normal, but hey, got one in there somewhere.
Yay!
But definitely Thrawn was a big part of this episode, and definitely he worked his magic through this, because even once he had them thrown into the cell to be held, he leaves Slavin in charge, saying he has to return to his ship to complete an experiment.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, his experiment is, what's Hera going to do next?
Right.
Which was phenomenally played. Of course, he's standing on the ship watching from above. I mean, they're in the atmosphere. They're watching. He sees the explosion. He sees everything happen there on the at Hera's house. As the ghost takes off and comes flying straight towards him and past him, and he decides not to take any action against him. He said, as you said earlier, he says, they've earned their victory for today.
And he learned from it. That's very enlightening.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, let's break that down. He was very enlightened about what happened. He learned a lot about them. What do you feel was his biggest takeaway from this interaction?
Well, one of the things I think he realized was that Hera is one of those kind of people that will do whatever it takes to get what she wants. And I think that now that he has the Kalachuri, it's almost like a double-edged sword, because in a way, having that memento, as if you will, is not only a learning piece for him, but it's almost like, in some ways, sort of a slap in the face. I mean, yeah, he can say all he wants that he let them go, but I don't think that he thought she was going to blow the house up. So, and I think, you know, part of Hera too might be feeling like, yes, he got this totem, this Kalachuri, but every time he looks at it, he's going to think of me. So, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword that way.
Okay. Counter proposal. Of course, we know his ultimate game plan, his end game is the destruction of the rebels. Of course, he said earlier, to defeat your enemy, you must know them. Mm-hmm. Not simply their battle tactics, their history, their philosophy, their art. He's got their art. He's learned their philosophy, because at this point, Hera just proved by destroying her house, she's willing to lose everything.
Mm-hmm.
She just wiped out her past by destroying her house and escaping. So she's willing to lose everything at that point, is what it shows her. But I don't think holding onto the Kalachuri is going to have that raw, irritating, she got away thing for her. I think it's going to serve twofold for him. One, I think he purposely let him get away because he knew eventually she will lead him to a bigger fish to fry.
Mm-hmm.
And two, he knows she'll come back for the Kalachuri at some point.
Do you think she will? Do you really think she will?
I think at some point it will come back. I think it's going to be a MacGuffin some lit time later in the series.
I'd like to see that.
I think so.
I would.
And I don't think it's going to be an intentional grab, but I think she's going to be in an opportunity at some point where it's going to be within her grasp, where it's going to be there, and she's on a mission. She's trying to get something else done, but it's right there in her grasp. So why not just grab it?
Interesting.
So I think one, he kept, of course, one, because he's an art lover. He learns from all pieces of art, no matter what. And probably he's one of these art guys, which is going to look at the same painting 100 times and learn something from it every time he looks at it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's probably more he can learn from that Kalachuri, which is why he wanted to keep it.
Mm-hmm.
Two, it's an important Kalachuri because it belongs to the Syndulla family, the leaders of Ryloth at this point.
So you're thinking he's going to go back and learn more about what each part of it means. Is that what you're saying? Yes. So that way he can, okay. So
he can break Hera down further.
Interesting. I could see that happening.
That's where I see it heading at this point with the, mm-hmm. with the Kalachori. I think he let them go on purpose, not because he couldn't stop them. He obviously could have stopped them very easily.
Sure. Oh yeah.
But I think he let them go because he knows eventually she will be back and she's going to lead him to his ultimate end game, which is the destruction of the rebellion.
Hmm. He is smart that way. That's for sure.
If anybody's going to do it, he's going to do it. Mm-hmm. And that's where I see this going.
I hope they really play out a lot of episodes with Thrawn. I really do. And I'm wondering how far into the timeline this is all going to go. I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Exactly. What would be curious too is, of course, we know we're coming up to Rogue One, coming out soon. This is, of course, Rebel Season 3, supposed to be building up into Rogue One.
What is it, 61 days, I think I saw, as of today when we're recording. So by the time this drops, it'll be in the 50s.
I know, it'll be nice. We're ticking away. What if we see Thrawn in the background somewhere?
Ooh, that would be amazing. Not even going to lie. That'd be so great. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, there's so many little things that, you know, on my wish list that I hope are going to be in Rogue One. But I'm trying not to, you know, I've watched all the trailers and everything, but I'm trying not to overindulge mm-hmm. too much, just because, kind of like with Force Awakens, I do want to be surprised. I don't want to pull back too much of that curtain just yet.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, of course, we're a Coffee with Kenobi. We are spoiler free.
Exactly.
Unless it's officially released, we don't want to, we don't speculate. We won't discuss it. Rumors are rumors. Spoilers are spoilers. We don't talk about them here. But my word, there's so much. I cannot wait for this episode or for Rogue One to come out. So,
but that's, well, there's so much that could happen.
Oh yeah.
So
absolutely. Like, I'm still, my biggest wish, though, is at some point, either in Rogue One, to either have Chopper roll by, or to see if they're walking through the hangar, seeing the ghost sitting in the background.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's obvious.
Don't see the crew, don't see anybody else, but the ghost, or just Chopper rolling by.
That would be awesome.
That would send me over the edge.
And it would be, you know, the fans that watch Rebels, obviously, that would pick up on those little Easter eggs. And that would make so many fans very happy. But, I mean, it's obvious that things can make the jump from the cartoon realm into real life because, you know, of course, we have Saw Gerrera, you know, case in point right there from the Clone Wars. But, you know, it'd be so cool to see a lot of that stuff. But like I said, we'll just have to wait and see December 16th. Oh, so exactly. Counting down the days.
Oh, it's awesome. Can't wait. So definitely Hera's Heroes was a phenomenal episode. Mm-hmm. Definitely a great episode. We learned a lot about a lot of people in this. Hera, Thrawn. We even got to see some advancements in Kanan's learning at that point. And of course we got background on Chopper. I mean,
yay.
How cool is that?
Very.
So let's jump in real quick, because we did get one email with thoughts on Hera's Heroes from Dave Hackerson, who is writing us from Tokyo, Japan.
Woo, ain't so cool. Awesome?
Tokyo, Japan.
Wow.
So, and he, of course, shared a few thoughts here, and we'll jump into them here real quick. He says, first of all, this episode is a testament to the fact that Rebels team has hit their stride this season. I agree. I have enjoyed every episode so far to date, but these first few episodes of season 3 show that they have further refined their craft. I believe that part of this is because of the stakes are higher and so much is done to move along the narrative in a way fitting for the growing gravity of the circumstances for our beloved characters find themselves in. Very well said.
Absolutely.
And they've done very well doing that. The script writing has lent itself to the gravity of every situation as it grows larger and larger through each episode.
Well, you know, it's one of those things, and we've talked about it before, that even though Rebels is an animated television series that's on the Disney Channel, it is something that appeals to every facet of fandom. And fans like us, like older adults, such as those that have been in the Star Wars realm, I guess you could say, for years and years and years, have embraced the series because of the way that they have taken it to that next level. And they have expounded upon these stories. And it's obvious that, you know, with the story group and everyone that's involved, that it is a true labor of love. It's not just, okay, let's just put the Star Wars, you know, series out and see how people like it. It's something that is taken very seriously. And no matter what age group you're in, you're going to find something that appeals to you.
Exactly. Exactly. You can't, there's always something that's going to appeal. And I look at Rebels and I looked at Clone Wars the same way. These are shows made for fans. They're made by fans.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have fans making something for fans, it's going to be phenomenal. It's going to grow. And it's going to get more intense as it goes, because the fans making it are going to understand what the fans are looking for. And mm-hmm. with a story like Rebels that's building to what it's building to in Rogue One, and of course, and ultimately, A New Hope, that there's a lot of gravity that has to be portrayed to make that transition into A New Hope believable at that point.
Right. Like we said, they've done such a seamless job, and I take my hat off to them. I really do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Dave actually continues here. It says the opening shot of this episode reminds me of the cinematography on display in John Ford's classic Western epics. Thoughts came to mind of the scenes from Stagecoach and Fort Apache, in which the wagons whisked by a low camera looking upward, followed by the pursuers on hot on their heels. In contrast to how Ryloth was portrayed in the Clone Wars, we are given a wide sweeping views of the landscape and the butte-like structures that evoke images, of Monument Valley, the locale where many of Ford's films and other Westerns were shot. The Western feel was further reinforced by the appearance of the Syndulla household, which reminded me of a fusion between a hacienda and a cliff dweller housing of the Anasazi culture, such as the Mesa Verde.
Wow. Very good catches. There. Yeah. I mean, I didn't really watch a whole lot of Western, so I'll take your word for it there. But yeah, I mean, I could see the whole hacienda thing for sure.
Well, I grew up watching a lot of the Ford movies because I was a big John Wayne fan, and he did a lot with John Wayne.
There you go.
He's dead on in that. I mean, anytime you had somebody running, you know, whether it was opening scenes or even later in the movie, and they're being chased by somebody, you always have that low camera angle as the people fleeing are coming by and looking on, it's angled up looking at the people coming. So it gives it a sense of urgency. And very well done, very well caught. And of course, he goes into two final observations. First, he was, of course, and we've hit on these already, actually, he was impressed to see how well Kanan moved in combat in this episode. It seemed that he has learned how to see without seeing and is able to call upon the Force to deflect blaster bolts that he almost certainly uses his eyes to detect when he had the physical sight. And the second impression is in regards to Thrawn. I was fascinated at his own deep interest in the Syndulla family heirloom and the Twi'lek culture. While much has been made of him using his love of art as a means to psychoanalyze his foe and break down how they function, I believe he identifies with their art to a certain extent because he too heralds from a tribe that is considered by many humans to be beneath them. Hmm. He's lashing out at Slavin for constantly belittling the Twi'leks, and what he calls primitive art seems to have touched the wrong chord within Thrawn, contributed to him letting Slavin literally fall flat on his face during the prisoner exchange. well said. Yeah, there definitely could be some truth in that. I mean, definitely it would make some sense if, of course, especially with the way he lashed out at Slavin, if there was that connection with him coming from that tribe, from a tribal background. We always know we always had the impression from the Legends line that, of course, the Emperor was not fond of aliens. But yet we have Thrawn as a Grand Admiral, who's obviously an alien. And, of course, if alien cultures are beneath the Empire, I could see that striking a chord with him. What do you think?
Well, it was David, right, that wrote in?
Dave, yes.
Hi, David. That was an awesome email. I would love to see, you know, as far as what they do with Rebels, how they maybe somehow do at some point explore Thrawn's backstory and where he actually did come from, to see, you know, how much of that are they going to pull from Legends? How much of that is going to be sort of reinvented, I guess you could say. But yeah, it's obvious that it struck a chord with him and he didn't like it. So, so that was really interesting. But I think it's also cool how, you know, in the email, he points out the different things that we had hit upon as well. But yet he also picked out things about the Westerns and so on. And I think that's a great tribute to this series in general, that there are certain things that no matter where you are, there's sort of this universal resonance that hits all of us in these certain chords. But yet each one of us still takes away something different in a unique way too. So I think that's really cool.
Oh, definitely. And I definitely want to say thanks to Dave for writing in. That's awesome email. Thanks for listening from in Japan of all places.
Yeah,
as well, man. That's awesome.
Very cool.
I know he's on Twitter and we've chatted a little bit on Twitter back and forth, which is cool. So definitely thanks for writing in and sharing your thoughts. We want everybody to do that. Everybody, if you want to share your thoughts on an episode, whether we've already discussed it or not, send it to us. We can always discuss it in an episode like we did today. It's at rebelsreactions@coffeewithkenobi.com. Just send us your thoughts, and it could be included in a future episode. Hera's Heroes, final thoughts, Jay.
Wow, so many. Like I said, this was such a multi-layered episode. It was great because it did bring back that feeling of the Clone Wars, and it brought back those warm feelings to our heart, as Yoda would say, between Sham and Hera. And I love the pure look of joy on her face when she saw her dad after he had gotten onto the Ghost. And, you know, you could just tell that their relationship has come a long way since Homecoming. And so that really hit it for me too. I loved the music. I'm not sure if we touched upon that at all. Kevin Kiner's music just really just hit home with me in this one. And I just loved the episode in general. It's definitely one of my favorites so far. And with each new episode that's coming through, down the pike here, I just can't wait to see what comes next. And I love that they're focusing on different characters in different episodes. Last week, we got to see a lot of Sabine. And this week, we got to see a lot of Hera. So, and, you know, of course, we've been focusing on Ezra and Kanan and that type of thing. But overall, yeah, this was definitely a top pick Rebels episode for me. Loved it.
Oh, I have to agree. Definitely, this was a phenomenal episode. There's so many layers to the onion of this episode that you can't get into all of it. Whether it's the angle between Thrawn and Hera, the angle with Kanan, of course, Cham and Hera at that point, the animosity between Slavin and Cham, we didn't even touch on. But obviously there's a lot of animosity there. I mean, there's the very in-depth episode that they wrote to fit in 22 minutes. It's incredible. Yeah. Definitely a great episode. And definitely a must see on any type of, best Rebel episodes out there. It's going to be in that list for sure. 'Cause there's so much to glean from this episode.
And seeing Zeb give Kanan or Ezra a noogie in the background when he grabs Ezra and just like gives him the noogie on top of his head. That was great. Oh, that was family. Awesome. Here we go. Yep. And it all comes back to that. It's family. And I've always said Star Wars is about family. Exactly. And I know a lot of us feel the same way, that that's the bottom line and the constant thing that we come back to.
Oh, absolutely. And it's always the relationship and the family aspect of Star Wars, whether it's the story they're telling on screen about the family or whether it's the family you're watching it with. There's mm-hmm. a family aspect to this series and to the movies that you have that's unprecedented with any other production or fandom out there. So definitely a phenomenal job with the Hera's Heroes. Grading it, man, this is a hard one to grade. This was a really good episode. I think there were definitely a lot of high points, a lot we learned from it. I would definitely, it was fun seeing the Biker Scout make his premiere appearance. Of course, it's always great to see Thrawn. I think overall, though, with everything included in it, and you mentioned Kiner's music, which was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. If you get a chance, go on the StarWars.com, pull up the episode guide for Hera's Heroes, and they have Thrawn's audio cue up there for this episode. So go listen to that, and if you want to listen to it, incredible.
I'll have to check that out.
It's really good. But overall, grading this episode, I'm going to have to give it an A-. They squeezed so much into the episode. It was fun. It was enjoyable. But you know, there's still, I don't know. It left me wanting more, which is always a good thing. I don't know, but there was something in it missing that keeps me from pushing it all the way up to the top. What do you think? How would you grade this episode?
You know, I do agree with you in a lot of ways. And I think that those holes were left in there purposely, because if you bring full closure to every episode, then what is there to look forward to? So, you know, I agree with you. There was, like I said, at first it was a little hard for me to even buy into the idea that Hera would have gone through with a personal mission like this, because it just wasn't like her. But you know, in the end you could see why she did it. And, you know, it obviously served a greater purpose than just for this personification of Hera. It was for the entire series to propel it forward. So I would definitely give it an A, but you know, and I, yeah, maybe reluctantly an A- as well, because there were some things about it that I would have liked to have seen just maybe a little bit different. But yeah, overall, I think it had the full package. You had your comedy, you had your emotional things going on, you had your endearing points, and you had some learning points as well. So I really do think that there was a lot to be said for this episode, for sure.
Definitely there is. Great episode. A lot to look forward to in the future as we go forward with Rebels going through the future. And next week is going to be a great episode. We got the Clankers back.
Mm-hmm.
Just, if you can't get behind Rex and Clankers, I don't know what you're doing in Star Wars, my man. I mean, so a lot of great, so another great episode coming up this week. So be on the lookout for that. If you haven't seen the preview, hit us up on Twitter at Rebels Reactions. I got the preview for that clip that they released for the new episode up there. And of course, watch Rebels Recon. It gives you another clip there as well as gives you some nice insight into Hera's Heroes as well. So, Jay, if they want to continue talking Star Wars with you, if our listeners want to talk to you or touch base with you, whether it's talking about Hera's Heroes or just talking about Star Wars in general, how can they get a hold of you?
Well, the easiest way to find me is on Twitter. That's my favorite social media vice for sure. And I am at Joyce Krebs, JoyceKrebs. Jay is my nickname. That's I prefer, actually. Or you can also email me at JK, it's JAYK, at coffeewithkenobi.com. And I'm going to be sharing one of my new blogs with you guys. By the time this comes out, it will have already dropped. And this month I'm talking about the Jar Jar and Us All in honor of preventing bullying. It's National Prevent Bullying Month, so it's kind of fun to talk about that. I'm a big proponent of anti-bullying, so as a teacher, it kind of goes with the territory.
Oh, very good, very good. I can't wait to read that. Misa excited.
Ah!
Yeah. Well, Jar Jar and all of us, so absolutely looking forward to that. And of course, definitely, you know where to find. Everybody knows where to find me. I'm of course, Rebels Reaction. I gave you our at Rebels Reaction from Twitter. Email rebelsreactions@coffeewithkenobi.com. Email us your thoughts on this episode, or of course on the next episode when it comes out. Email us as well. We want to hear from you. Let us know what you think. Your thoughts. Let us know if you just want to get to me directly. You can find me on Twitter at TA Harris 1210 79. Or email me at aharris@coffeewithkenobi.com as well. Best ways to get hold of me. Definitely great episode, great show. Jay, thank you so much for coming back on and joining us this week. It's always a blast to have you on and talk to you. We will have to do this again.
Well, thank you so much, Aaron. And as you know, I always love to talk Rebels, and I am here for you anytime you want to have me back.
Perfect. Well, I appreciate it, Jay. Thank you, everybody, so much for listening to Rebels Reactions. Check out the rest of the Coffee with Kenobi shows. They're on our website at coffeewithkenobi.com. Coffee with Kenobi, Comics with Kenobi, Lattes with Leia, Legends Library. Check them all out. Check out all of our other bloggers. A lot of great stuff popping up there on the website. But definitely, thank you so much for listening tonight. Thank you very much. Remember, this is the podcast you're looking for.
Well, kid, you pulled it off.
Was there ever any doubt?
Yes.
Chopper, get us out of here!
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes or Stitcher. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi. As well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed at Coffee with Kenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, the album is Eye to Eye by Steve Torak.
This is Spectre One. I need a lift.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along.
If you love Star Wars and love the excitement of chasing your favorite Star Wars collectibles, the Star Wars Digital Card Trader collecting app from Topps is for you. Download the free app from iTunes or Google Play and collect your favorite images from the classic 1977 Star Wars cards to Clone Wars, Star Wars Rebels, The Force Awakens, and much more. Collect and trade with friends new and old through the Star Wars Digital Card Trader collecting app from Topps. These are the cards you're looking for.